Okay, so we're here to start talking about machine learning for many body physics. I haven't taught you all yet this year, so I'll just start by introducing myself. I'm Lauren. This course is, I'm going to teach the majority of the lectures for this course, but I'll also be joined by Mohammed. He's also the TA, and he's going to give a couple lectures later in the course. And then towards the end of the course, we'll have a lecture by Juan and also one by Roger. And I also just want to acknowledge that we've all kind of built the course material together, so they definitely deserve credit as well. So the first thing I wanted to do is just start with some questions to kind of get us on the same page. So machine learning is an area that's existed for a while. It's becoming increasingly popular, I think, over the years. So I think it's kind of good to just start by talking about what it is and maybe also what it isn't. You might have heard a lot of things that surround this term, machine learning. So what are some things that come to your mind when you hear about that?
Regression.
Regression, great, yeah. And this can be anything. It can be methods, it can be applications, just the kind of words that you kind of tend to hear. Yeah.
Processing data.
Nice, yeah. I think data is really important, yeah. Other things, yeah.
Supervised or unsupervised.
Nice, yeah. And I should say, if some people are not familiar with all these words, it's totally fine. We're going to be going into that. Yeah, Anna?
Taylor approximation of the 21st century.
Ooh, I like that. All right, the whole thing definitely wasn't on my list. 21st, yeah. Okay, nice. Sophia?
Overfitting.
Overfitting, nice. Ooh. That's a good one. Interesting. I sometimes give talks about machine learning to more general audiences, and I often ask this question, and in those cases, people will often say, like, robots killing the world or something. So you guys are giving very different answers. It's great. Anything else?
Convolution.
Cool, yeah, convolution. Okay, nice. So these are all things I think that we're going to talk about more in this course. So that's great. No, I don't see any huge misconceptions so far. It's really awesome. Okay.
Before we go forward with that,
discuss
some logistics as to how many homeworks will be there and what means what.
Yeah, so you know, I'm going to do a few, I'm going to motivate a few things, and then I'm definitely going to get into the outline of the course in a bit more detail. Is that okay? Okay, great. So these are all some great terms that are definitely important to think about when we talk about machine learning. Let's also ask another question. What is machine learning useful for, or maybe what are some applications that you've heard about? Can be general or more specific, anything that comes to mind. Sophia, yeah?
Classification,
nice, yeah. So I'll just write something specific that is maybe one of the first things you might see is for images. Of course, we can classify many things that maybe aren't so easy to visualize as images, but I think kind of using machine learning to identify what's an image is something really common. Something else? Anna, yeah.
We're generally pattern recognition.
Pattern recognition, mm-hmm. What about something more specific? Oh yeah, yeah, in the back there. Yeah.
Mine's not very specific, but function approximation.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, Anna, good.
There for probability distributions.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll say learning probability distributions. Nice. Yeah, Sophia.
Generation also of images, for example.
Yeah, nice.
Or like music, I can do that too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think generation is a big category. Again, like these lists can all go on for a long time. But I think this is something where for a long time people always thought, you know, art was something that can only be done by humans. But you can definitely look up some really beautiful art done by machine learning algorithms. Other things? It doesn't have to be like general, you know, pattern recognition. Is something general. You can maybe think of a specific field. Any specific fields that you tend to hear about in the news using machine learning? Sorry?
Astronomy.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, for sure. They have lots of data, right?
Yeah. I would say that with machine learning, we can process huge volumes of data that with humans, we can never do that.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We used to classify galaxies, for example, using eyes, like human eyes, and we cannot do that anymore.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that, I mean, I think that could go in either category here, but yeah, let's just put that here, yeah. Okay. Maybe I'll just add a few others to the list. So you can also use it for language translation. Actually, you can look up the way that Google Translate was translating different languages before and after it started incorporating machine learning. And you can even just notice yourself a big difference there.
To recommend you shows.
Yeah, awesome, yeah. Yeah, so different recommender systems for sure. Netflix is one. It's also can be used for playing games. So a few years back, there was this huge breakthrough with AlphaGo, being able to beat humans at this really complicated game of Go. Another one, self-driving cars. And okay, I could make this a really long list, but maybe I won't. You know, there's so many different things. I'll just read some other ones that I wrote down. Medical diagnosis is another one. There were some breakthroughs a few years ago where machine learning algorithms were actually able to identify cancer, I think, in lungs better than humans. Detecting fraud. In financial trading, designing materials. Of course, this can go on. This is not an extensive list. And of course, in this class, we're specifically going to talk about how it applies in physics and specifically for many-body physics. Okay, last question I want to ask you guys. So often you might hear machine learning talked about at the same time as artificial intelligence. Does anyone know kind of what distinguishes those two things? Or are they the very same thing?
I know ML is the subset of AI.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Yeah. So if I think of AI, ML is kind of contained. So one definition of artificial intelligence is that computers are somehow trying to mimic human behavior. What's really special about machine learning is this word learning, really. You're programming those computers to be able to actually learn something. So we don't give them explicit rules for AI. We potentially could. What about neural networks? How does that fit into this picture? Yeah?
Submodel of ML?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So again, I just like to make this clear because sometimes people hear about them kind of interchangeably. So this is really a specific algorithm that we're going to talk a lot about in this class, but it might look something like this. People use different pictures sometimes. And then last thing, what about deep learning? I guess you can probably guess it's some subset of neural networks going with the pattern recognition that you guys are probably doing. But what's deep learning? Does anyone know? Yeah.
You start to have neural networks that have multiple layers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So each of these kind of vertical slices is known as a layer. And as we have more layers, it becomes more
perfect.
Yeah.
I didn't get maybe what do you mean by neural networks as such? It's just many nodes interconnected. What it's like you defined AI, you defined ML, you defined.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I'm purposefully not going into a lot of detail because we're going to have like a whole week of lectures on this. Like, so that's why I'm just for now showing you a picture, but of course, like I'm going to define everything that this means in the class. We're going to look at how it applies in problems. And so that's not what we're doing today. It's going to be all next week's lectures, as I'll show you. Just to kind of show you the way that this structure works, that because I think sometimes when you read headlines or things like that, sometimes people will use all four of these terms interchangeably. So just to show you from the beginning that they're different and kind of how that hierarchy works. Any other questions?
I just want to say thank you for actually finally making that clear in my mind.
Nice. Okay. I'm glad. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's tough in a field like this because machine learning is something that a lot of people talk about, but a lot of people don't read about some of these basics, right? It's so easy to jump right into some advanced applications that you're reading about and get confused about those things. So, yeah. Yeah.
Something else. Does AI exist?
Does AI exist? What do you mean by exist?
Already, if we have computers that mimic human.
I mean, I guess it depends what you mean by mimic, right? Like,
I know we have machine learning and it exists, but AI, I'm not sure.
I guess it depends, like, how much you mean by mimic. Like, by this, I don't mean a computer that is that is indistinguishable from a human. That's not at all what I mean. In that case, I would say no. But there's some algorithms that we design to do a specific task, right? Like, even some of these. For example, like medical diagnosis, that's a specific task that AI can do better than a human. So in that case, I would say it can mimic that certain type of human behavior, right? Something that can, a single computer that can mimic all human behavior, then the answer is no, right? That's a good question. Maybe let me put this in quotes just to note that this is kind of, maybe I should be more careful what I mean by that. I mean human behavior.
And but maybe how because I don't know anything about this, but how does say a laptop DaVinci, this also does some calculations that human could do. So how do we say that something is not an AI versus something is an AI?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not exactly, I think it's something that maybe you can read different definitions of what exactly people mean by AI. I guess AI is trying to somehow replace humans. So I guess then you can be saying in some way that your laptop is a specific type of AI for sure. Like
everything is any technology.
Yeah, that's right. No, that maybe that definition should be a little bit more clear of how exactly what the boundary is between when you're mimicking human behavior. I agree this is a little bit vague. It could probably be made a little more concrete. Okay, so part of the reason that I'm not delving into that is because this course is specifically going to be about the machine learning piece of this diagram, right? So let's talk a little more specifically about machine learning and how it relates to many-body physics, which is what we're going to be looking at here. So again, let me just emphasize, I'm starting a little bit general here, and then I'm going to get more specific with a lot of examples of what I mean. But quite generally, we could say that machine learning is trying to do some kind of a training procedure or some kind of a training algorithm so that it can be eventually able to do things such as detecting and characterizing different features or different properties that exist in data. And now, let's kind of compare this with what we tend to be doing in many-body physics. So one goal that you could think of in many-body physics, maybe it's not the only one, but one major goal of the field would be to try to take microscopic quantities and be able to learn how to use them to predict and explain macroscopic phenomena. And you might notice there can kind of be a connection between these two sentences. If I kind of identify these are some kind of features. And again, I'm going to explain what I mean by features. And I kind of think about this as data. So, as I was thinking about what to talk about today, I was reading, I just kind of Googled many body physics, and I realized people sometimes mean different things when they say this. So let me tell you what I mean by that. So a lot of systems we might study in physics have many particles in them. But those many particles interacting have to be fundamental within many-body physics. So let me give some examples of what I mean by that. So many body physics is something we need to consider if we're trying to describe things like high temperature superconductors, fractional quantum Hall systems, many qubits in quantum computers. But there's also many cases where it's not needed. It's not needed to describe things such as electron conduction in most metals or semiconductors. In those cases, there are known quasi-particle theories you can come up with where you don't fundamentally need to rely on these interactions. So those are kind of the class of problems that we want to see. There's going to be a lot of data, and how can we use machine learning to kind of give us some insight? Yeah.
Well, couldn't you say that the fact that quasi-particle theory exists is a macroscopic phenomena, that's like a feature, like it's...
Yeah, I was thinking about this line yesterday too.
Physics to describe the interactions of these quasi-particles. Mm-hmm. But the fact that those quasi-particles are there, wouldn't that be considered many-body physics?
The fact that, I guess, I think the differentiation here is that, okay, so maybe you, I'm not saying you couldn't gain insight into these theories by using machine learning. It's maybe just that you don't need to because we already have an existing theory that can transform it into something where these interactions aren't so fundamental. Maybe, and again, I'm not so sure exactly because I think it also depends on maybe the current state of the field, right? Like maybe someday we'll come up with a better theory in these regimes too. And then maybe analyzing all of this data to try to do this analysis isn't necessary. But again, maybe you could actually program machine learning to come up with those kind of quasi-particle theories. That could be, I think that's a good point, that this could be seen as one of those features. But maybe that's not a place where we want to concentrate our efforts, right? Yeah, good question. Okay. So let me just kind of continue this list here. So this is something we're going to see come up in this course as well, that these type of systems are exponentially difficult to solve as you try to study more and more particles in them. And we're going to see that computational methods can really maybe help us push the boundary of what kind of systems we can study in some of these cases. Can you guys still read this if I'm writing here?
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like over here that you can't see, right? Okay, let me kind of like draw. So machine learning is not the only type of algorithm or computational method I can use to try to study these systems. There's others. So these are just a few you might have heard of. There's lots. We're not going to dive into these in too much detail in this course, although we will talk a little bit about Monte Carlo because in some of the assignments or some of the cases we'll look at, we'll actually use Monte Carlo together with Monte Carlo methods. Sorry, machine learning together with Monte Carlo methods. Now, there's different definitions you can look up, of course, of exactly what we're trying to do. And coming up with kind of a way to summarize all these methods is not easy. But one thing I thought of, where I can kind of think how machine learning differentiates itself from these methods, is that in these cases, I'm usually starting from some kind of a physical theory that's incorporating some of my knowledge of physics, and then often using that theory to generate some data. And then machine learning typically a little bit more centered around data right from the beginning. So here, I would say that in machine learning, we're more typically going to start with some physical data and then try to use that to train our algorithms to learn about properties of the system. And again, it's kind of hard to draw this line because we're often going to be using these methods together. They're going to complement each other. But the fact of exactly how data comes in, I think that's what kind of what makes any questions? Okay, so when I was asking in the beginning what you think of when you hear about machine learning, somebody said supervised and unsupervised. So you might have heard about this distinction. These are kind of two different types of machine learning algorithms. So I want to just start by kind of telling you about the general categories of algorithms you can study with machine learning. Okay, so the first one is supervised learning. I'll abbreviate that just SL. See if I can fit this here. Does anyone know what's kind of some of the important distinguishing characteristics of supervised learning? Yeah?
The data has labels.
Exactly, yeah. So our data set can kind of be thought of as in pairs, X, Y. Is this too small? Am I writing too small here for you to read this subscript? Probably, right? It's okay? It's okay. I'll try to write a little bigger. I was just a bit squished. So it's just kind of the dimension of my data here. So it's x1 up to x. I'm calling it dx. I'll be repeating it. And I'm going to post these notes. Okay, so again, this idea of having labels is really important. And then overall, the task here is we want to try to fit some function to y. And we're going to talk about all different types of functions we can use. They can be different levels of complication, it can have a lot of different properties, but this is kind of how to summarize what I'm doing. And now, I think one of the first words someone said when I asked about machine learning was regression. So now we see what this is. Regression is really this process when my labels are continuous. And classification is this task when those labels are discrete. Okay, I'm going to show you an outline in a second of the course, but supervised learning is going to be a really big part of this course. But for now, let me just tell you about the other classes of machine learning as well. So in this case, you might be able to guess because we said labels are fundamental for supervised learning. So in this case, I could think of my data set as being kind of the same, looking similar to above, but I don't have these labels in this case. So now we come up to another concept. I think it was Anna that mentioned this when we were making our kind of brainstorming list before, which is about representing probability distributions. So there's a lot of different categories of unsupervised learning, but again, kind of a way we can summarize them is that we're trying to extract meaningful features of our data set by trying to find a way to represent the probability distribution of that data and learn from that. Okay, the third category is one that hasn't come up yet, but does anyone know what the third category is? Yeah, exactly. And it's okay that nobody thought of it because we're actually not going to cover this in this course, except for right now in one sentence. Thank you. But I'll just tell you that the way I can think of this class of learning is so if you're interested in reinforcement learning, we did have two lectures on it when we ran this course a couple of years ago. But we've just kind of done some restructuring and it's not going to be in the course this year, but let me know if you're interested. I could point you towards some references for that. Any questions? So let me now tell you kind of the outline for this course. So I know I don't believe you guys have had to program in Python yet, and we also have some students that are not from PSI taking this course. So tomorrow's lecture is actually going to be about just kind of covering some basics of Python and different libraries that are going to be useful, I think, in this course, but actually pretty widely useful. So we won't actually talk about machine learning libraries yet tomorrow. It's going to be kind of more the basics of Python for people who might not know. And I'm going to also just emphasize this lecture will not be recorded because it's actually going to, we'll do it here, but it'll be a little bit more kind of a tutorial style. I'll give you guys a notebook, and depending on how familiar you are, you can kind of jump to different sections that are going to be more or less challenging for you. So again, that's just kind of to hopefully get everyone onto the same page for when we really do our tutorials that will involve machine learning. And then for the remainder of today, we're going to talk a little bit more about supervised learning, and then after tomorrow, that'll be until lecture 8. Then we're going to talk about a few different unsupervised learning methods for a few lectures, although I also want to emphasize we're, those of us that are teaching this course, we're also kind of developing a follow-up course to this that'll be maybe more of a PhD course. So for those of you that are staying around Perimeter next year, we're probably going to have a whole other course that's going to go into a lot more detail about unsupervised learning. And one distinction, which I'll just kind of say for now, but again, we're going to get into a lot more details about what this means, is that this part of the course is going to be all about classical machine learning methods. But then we're going to talk about how we can incorporate quantum into our methods. And so this is going to be just one lecture. But again, we'll get into that a lot more if anyone is going to take this follow-up course next year. And then we're also going to have some lectures about kind of modern research that's going on. It's kind of at this intersection of physics, probably specifically many-body physics, but I'll just say physics for now. So Juan and Roger are going to give you lectures at the end of course that are kind of going to show you more modern things that they're thinking about. And Mohammed, your TA, he's also going to tell you a little bit about his research. He was a PsI student a few years ago, so he'll tell you a little bit about his journey since taking this course, what kind of research he's been involved with. And then there was a question about kind of the outline as well. So let me maybe just say, and I'm happy to take more questions too. In lectures, we're mostly going to be, except for tomorrow, where we're going to talk about programming. For the most part, the lectures are going to be more theory-based. They're going to be discussing different ideas on the blackboard. And then the tutorials are really going to be where we're going to focus more on that coding aspect of things. And I'm planning 2 homework assignments for this course. Both will be coding. They might have a little small theory derivations, but they'll definitely be mostly focused on coding.
So what would that be, for example? What projects do you have?
One of them, actually, I'm going to show you in an example right now. So I think one of them is basically about phase. Let me draw it so that we all get on the same page before I say, yeah.
As for an editor, are we using Jupyter Notebooks just so that maybe we can download it before?
Yeah, so actually what we're going to do, we are going to use Jupyter Notebooks, but in the form from Google Collaboratory. So you guys should actually all have it from your PI accounts. If anyone doesn't have a Gmail account, I should have said that. That's a really good point. If anyone's not from PI taking the course and you don't have Gmail, it would be great to create a Gmail account for tomorrow because we're going to use this Google Collaboratory, which is basically like a Jupyter Notebook, but has all of these libraries installed, so you don't have to worry about that. Any other questions? No? Okay. So in the last few minutes, let's just talk about a few examples of supervised learning and then get to Anna's question about some of the homeworks you guys are going to look into. So let me first give you some examples that are a little more general, not necessarily in physics, but maybe just help us to understand the scope of what we can study here. So let's look at this regression category, and let's specifically consider a case. Where I have some set of coordinates x and y. That are all 1D coordinates. My data points and my labels. And I'm saying this is more that, you know, this doesn't have to be in physics, but of course it could be. You could come up with a problem in physics that has this type of data set. And let's just say I'm given some. I could think of plotting these on some axes and then using different types of methods, I could try to fit some function to describe my data. And I'm not right now telling you how we're going to determine that curve because there's a lot of different methods and we're going to talk about a few different ways of doing that. But this could be kind of the way of formulating a class of problems we might look at in supervised learning. Another example, which is not really in the realm of physics, but it's one that you'll often encounter when you maybe look at some tutorials online for supervised learning, is how to classify handwritten digits. And we're gonna see the algorithms that do this actually can be applied pretty almost directly to some interesting problems in physics. In this case, I'm gonna show you more picture of it actually, but in this case, our input is going to be some image where somebody has drawn some digit from 0 to 9 on a piece of paper or something, and so it's an actual image of someone drawing that. And then y is going to be the actual number representing that. So let me show, for example, if this is kind of an image and on it, imagine, I'm not so good at using this. Just trying to make it fuzzy so you can convince you that it's an image. So if this was kind of what my image looked like, I would hope that the corresponding label would be a 9. And of course, we might have cases where people tend to draw these digits in different ways. So just one example that I think of is the number 1. Some people draw it like this. Some people draw it more like that. But in either case, I might have some of each of those in my data set that look more like this or more like this, but in both cases, I should get the label 1 out. So some algorithm we would design would kind of have to take account of the fact that it might not always look like this, it might not always look like this, but in both cases, I should still get that. I should still be able to find a way to learn how to get that label in the end. Okay, so now let me talk about something that we're going to be examining in, I guess, a couple of tutorials and also homework, first homework. Which is the Ising model. It wouldn't be a course in many body physics without the Ising model. Okay, so I think you've all taken a course in statistical physics, but let me just remind you of the parts of this model that are relevant to this example. So this is the Hamiltonian from an Ising model, and or this is specifically, I guess, a nearest neighbor Ising model. These S variables, we often call those spins, and they can be up or down, but on a computer, we're going to store that as 1 or 0. And this notation on the summation, I'm meaning nearest neighbors. Okay, so there's a couple of different problems that I can study for the icing model. One of them we're going to look at on Thursday, but I'm going to actually jump to talking about the one we're going to talk about later, just because that's something we're going to be kind of a bigger exploratory thing that we'll build up to for you to do on homework one. So I'm just calling this example 3B because I had planned to do 3A first, but I'm just not sure we'll have time, and we're going to talk about it on Thursday anyway. So just to be consistent with my notes, I'm calling this 3B. So in this case, we're going to be trying to study different properties of the different phases of this icing model. So just to remind you, this model, if I look at two dimensions, this nearest neighbor icing model has a phase transition at a critical temperature that's approximately 2.269. If I'm below that critical temperature, I'm in a ferromagnetic phase. Whereas if I'm above, my system will go into a paramagnetic phase. So this is kind of all background on the icing model, but let me now show you the actual machine learning formulation. So imagine I have a classifier. Let me call this. Because there's many different problems I could study with this type of model. Let me describe one that I'll call an icing phase classifier. As usual, my data set is going to be some set of pairs, x and y. But in this case, what x is really going to be, each x is going to be a spin configuration. So for all of the spins in my lattice, in my two-dimensional set, I'm going to have either 1 or 0, up or down, and I'm going to store all of those from 1 to n. And my label in this case is going to be really simple. It's just going to be 0 or 1, which represents ferromagnetic or paramagnetic. So the problem in this case, I would imagine that I'm given a set of data where I have many spin configurations where I know what the label is, and then I want to see if I can figure out a way to learn how to determine the label in cases where I only had spin configuration. So let me show you some examples. Okay, so this is a two-dimensional data set. So I'm going to just visualize it like this. And let me say that every time there's a spin that's pointing, which way did I do it? Up. It's going to be left blank. And I'm going to color it in whenever it's a down spin, just as a way that I can kind of think of it as an image. So in this case, most of my spins are up. So what I would hope in an ideal case is that the label for this should be ferromagnetic or 0. And then just to get clear, when I'm leaving a box empty, it's been up. When I'm coloring it in, it's been down. And let me just give you an example of the other case. If I have something where, you know, maybe closer, it looks a little bit more random whether it's up or down. In this case, I would definitely expect that I would want to have the label paramagnetic or 1. And if we look back at the handwritten digits, we can see this example actually has a lot in common with that example. In both cases, I'm taking something that could look like a black and white image. If I imagine that in that case, the pixels are just on or off, it could also be just stored as ones and zeros, just like here. And then I'm trying to get just some single label out in the end. In this case, it's 0 through 9. In this case, it's 0 through 1. But we can definitely see some parallels between those two examples. So this is one example of something that we're going to work up to being able to do on the homework and be able to look at a lot of different analyses of how we would actually train a model to learn about the phase transition in this type of data set. And that's, I guess, where I'll end for today. Again, there's another example of something we're going to study even sooner with the icing model, but I'll tell you about that one on Thursday. You guys have any questions for now? Okay, feel free to ask me if you have anything else you want to talk about.